You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, Side B.
What else? Are we going to talk about Ruler Sig Sag Sigala?
your girl SZA.
That's your girl. That's number two on your list.
Did not win for Best New Artist and got nothing out of any of the R&B awards.
And that's exactly what I was saying about the Academy getting it later than when the fans feel like they should have got it.
Yeah.
SZA will come out with another album next year or the year after, and then she'll win. She'll win a Grammy, and it'll mean something.
I can't wait to. I actually think like she can go, because even just the fact that she, you know, got to perform the Grammy stage, like that's a big look for her.
Yeah.
She's essentially like the second, like the just under Kendrick, like the second headliner on the TDE tour this summer. A ton of people are going to see her live.
Yep.
I think she can go in all sorts of places on her next album.
You got tickets for that, right?
I do.
There you go.
We talked about that last week.
Yep. Oh, we okay. I didn't know that.
I know it's hard to remember when did we record and when did we not record.
Yes, because we don't have a set schedule.
We're all
anymore.
Over the place right now.
We are. And thank you guys for sticking that out with us as we just kind of just whenever we can find time.
We're trying to make
thank
it work.
You guys.
Armand's a busy man.
Doc's a busy man. Like we just, you know, streets keep calling. I'm glad we literally don't get the where's the new episode. We don't get that at all. So I appreciate that.
Well, you know what they say. Higher goes keys to the culture, right?
Oh, my God. Anyway, so she didn't win anything.
Yeah.
And so do you feel like she should have got Best New Artist?
Yeah. I think that would have been a really obvious, like, normal move. Like, she's been – yeah, like, I mean, actually, speaking of that MasterCard, like, corporate event I went to, like, she was, like, the face of that everywhere.
Mm.
Like, she was, like, the headline. Like people are picking up on SZA. Like that album really worked. Like, but I think, it's really kind of interesting, right? In this era where it's like she, you know, we don't have a ton of the traditional like artist factory, like label situations, right? Because you can, like 15 years ago, I would have told you with 100% certainty, oh, for her next album, she's going to have the big name single from the Neptunes. And then she's like, you know, like that sort of hit making setup to like get her over the hump. Cause she hasn't had like a smash yet. Right.
Yeah.
So, but like on the one hand, I'm like, I don't really know if that still exists anymore. But on the other hand, I shouldn't say I know her A&R. I used to cross paths on a online message board with the guy who then became TDE's A&R. His name's Tunji. And.
Oh, really?
That name sound familiar?
No.
But anyway, but,
he was on So?
No, he was on another one I went to after So. But like he's done a ton of stuff with TDE but he is like a legit, like A&R, like who still, so like, I think she has like a really, between that and TDE, like, I don't know, like, I still think she might actually make that sort of old school leap on the next album. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people liked The Weeknd, but was it a smash?
No, but I think it's just, you know, I don't know. I think people liked it more than you and I did. Like, people liked the Daft Punk tracks more than we did.
But again, like, I'm not an angsty 20-year-old woman, so I'm not going to like SZA's album. It was produced well, it was written well, but it just made me really angsty listening to it. So that's not my audience. So maybe that's what's missing from her, is making a more, I don't want to say commercially viable, but just a more easily accessible record.
I don't know. I mean,
but that's still authentically her, though, because
I didn't feel that way listening to it.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
Like, cool. Fine. Okay.
Yeah, hey, shout out to you. Like that's what makes Clock Radio Speakers a joy. So, are you mad at Alicia Carr winning?
Let's just say Best New Artist has a very tortured history.
Yes.
Right. It's not like they always get it right.
Yes.
Sometimes it's because there's a lot of good dope people in one year, but sometimes it's, you know, it's a Milli Vanilli situation.
Yes.
Where it's like, that was just the thing of the moment or whatever. And I'm no disrespect to Alicia Carr. It's just that is not a award, like, and shout out to her for getting it. Like, but that is not a award that is 100% predictor of future success. I will say it is like, it's really boom or bust. You know what I mean? Like either you win that and it's like, oh wow. Yeah. Or it's like, no, not at all. So,
yep.
You know, hopefully she gets it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Anything else Grammy related that we need to talk about?
I don't think so, man.
Okay, where you want to go now?
I think it's time to talk about the Three Amigos.
Okay.
Let's talk about Culture 2.
All right, I'm going to set a timer because I'm not going to spend very much time on this album.
So let me set up some context first. So Culture 1 drops a year ago, right?
Yeah. Top of the year last year.
Top of the year last year. Then in 2017, we had members of the group do collabo albums with, like, we had the one with Travis Scott. We had the Metro Boomin, right? Collabo album. And then we didn't really talk about it in the show, but the Quality Control album, right?
Yeah. So I never heard it.
Right. It's not very good. It has, okay. By the way, that album has 30 tracks.
Woo!
22 of them have somebody from Migos on it.
Wow.
So that's a lot. And never mind all the songs and remix and everything else that they were featured on in 2017. Like, they have put out a lot of music, right? And now we get Culture 2, which is apparent. So when it gets released as a physical album, I think tomorrow, Friday, it'll be on two discs, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So physical sales will count as 2x.
Yep.
Right. And Ray Shremmerd's about to pull something similar, right? Except they're doing three discs.
Yep.
With the idea of one disc for one guy, one disc for the other, and one disc for the collab.
Yep.
Never mind that they, of course, will probably have each other featured. Like, it is what it is. I mean, I know there are differences to it, but this isn't quite a speaker box love below situation.
If Slim Jimmy knows what's good for him, Sway Lee will be all over his solo disc.
So I don't know. I mean, I think the Migos are really pressing the limits of what it means to oversaturate, right?
No.
You don't think so?
I mean, G-Unit, Ross to a slightly lesser degree.
No.
I think it's the same.
You don't think that this feels like extra?
No, because it might be extra because there are more resources that are available to oversaturate yourself versus what Ross had 5 years ago and versus what 50 had 10 years ago.
Hmm.
I would say that. Like, there was no social media back then. And, you know, social media wasn't as prominent when MMG was popping. I'd say that. But in terms of, like, content, like, if we're just talking music, no, it's about the same.
The other thing that was really noteworthy for me, thinking about where they have come in the past year, like, two main differences. So the expectations going into Culture 1, I felt were, I don't know, not that high, right?
Yeah.
I think Bad and Bougie, the success of it, remember, it was kind of viral at first. And then it actually became a success. And I think that sort of, like, the Migos were always kind of like the critics, or not, maybe not the critics, the influencers' favorite, right?
I would agree with that because it almost felt like Ray Shremmer was kind of supposed to be what the Migos are now, because Black Beatles started viral and just kind of like took off. But I don't think they followed that up with another record. And I think that's the difference between Ray Shremmer and the Migos, is that when Bad and Bougie blew up, they followed it up with another record.
Right,
I don't remember what that record is.
It was T-shirt.
And I think they utilize social media better. They oversaturate themselves in different ways. I think they're more polarizing and interesting than Ray Shremmer.
I mean, I also think that what Quality Control as a label is doing is they are better equipped to handle the realities of streaming. And what I mean by that is, so you look at the other difference between Culture 1 and Culture 2 is now Quavo is getting into producing. And they have another in-house producer who is the Migos DJ, DJ Durrell. And DJ Durrell and Quavo have production all over Culture 2.
Yeah.
And they have it all over the Quality Control album, which makes sense because, like, let's be honest, like, we'll talk about some of these individual tracks, but, like, you know, with a few exceptions, it's not like there's a lot of beats on here that you're just like, oh, wow. Yeah, they really got an A-level Metro Boomin beat here, right? Like, the star of the show here is, if you're into the Migos, you're into the Migos because of, well, maybe you're a fan of Offset's flows, or maybe you like to hear Quavo's melodies, but, like, that's the trick, right? It's about the three of them. And so if that's the case, and if, you know, the economics reward lots of tracks and constant amounts of content to be released, then I think what Quality Control is doing is really smart, because they're basically setting themselves up so they can economically put out a ton of stuff.
Right.
I mean, I don't think it's that dissimilar, although the economics were very different. If you think about how Rough Riders evolved, right? Where, like, think about DMX's first year, right? Two albums in 1 year. And think about how all of a sudden they had a bunch of in-house producers to handle all those beats for all those artists that they were putting out instead of going out and always having to pay somebody else for it.
Right.
Right. It's just that you have that sort of mentality, except now it's attached to, oh, right, we can just, we there's a streaming monster that we have to keep feeding.
Right.
So I just want to sort of, it's sort of what I'm thinking, because, you know, there's a lot of people talking about, there was a thing just before we started recording, right? Like, was it DJ Booth put a thing out on Twitter where it was like, you know, the DJ Durrell, the guy I just mentioned, the Migos DJ who's also producing, you know, said, oh, you know, they spent a max of 45 minutes on songs.
Yep.
So, you know, if you read the article, they're like, oh, yeah, like most songs are like 20, 25 minutes. And it's like, I don't know. On the one hand, I look at that and go, man, like, why are you bragging about that?
Right.
On the other hand, like, hip hop has lionized work ethic and the ability to be productive for a long time. Like, yep. No joke. That's a lot. That's a sizable piece of the mythology of Tupac.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So it's not that different to me.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know. There's also a bit of honesty to it. Although there is a bit of that. Some of that, what's embedded in there is still that, like, I'm not a rapper, I'm a trapper.
Yeah.
Like that too cool for school to care.
Jibber jabber.
Right. Yep. Nobody has said I'm not a rapper, I'm a trapper for a long time. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Culture 2 is, in many ways, it is a direct sequel to Culture 1. But like the Migos are really just at a fantastically different place in their career than they were 12 months ago.
Right. Absolutely.
And with that being said, I want to talk about some music.
Go right ahead.
I don't think there's a lot here that's good.
Yeah.
I like the beat to Narcos.
Okay.
Walk It, Talk It with Drake. It's dumb, but enjoyable. Like, it's a dumb song. And Drake kind of gets washed on it. I mean, he's also not caring, but it's really jarring to hear Drake on that very simplistic beat. But, like, Drake is just kind of like, he's doing it's a C-grade Drake performance. And then Offset comes in and is like, oh, yeah, watch this flow. Now watch this flow. Now watch this flow. But I like Walk It, Talk It. I shouldn't say I like it. It has been stuck in my head.
I feel like as much, and maybe this is just the rappity rapper in me.
Yeah.
I enjoy Takeoff a lot on this album.
You're not the first person who I've heard say that.
Like, particularly my favorite song on the album, which is Made Man, like, Quavo ruins that to me.
Yeah.
His vocal inflection does not go with that beat at all.
Yeah, Quavo, I mean, most people are saying Offset is sort of the MVP of this album, if such a thing exists. I mean, honestly, a lot of what Quavo's doing now is basically like either hooks or verses that might as well be hooks.
Yeah.
So I get that. I kind of like CC with Gucci Mane. It's cool. I still think Stir Fry is dope. It sticks out like a sore thumb.
Man, Stir Fry is such a good song, man.
Pharrell. Well, we're going to talk a lot about Pharrell in a bit.
Yeah, we are.
I kind of like Gang Gang. That's Murda on the beat. Because it's kind of a different sound for Migos, and it mostly works. And I appreciate that on a 24-track album where there's way too much stuff that sounds exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
The pseudo-good music track, White Sand, right? Travis, Ty Dolla, Big Sean. Not a fan.
Yeah, I'm good.
I like the beat that Cardo did on Open It Up. I need to hear that really loud in a club. Like, that was the other thing about being down in New York at the show, is the DJs who, like, warmed up or whatever, who were playing stuff. Man, I was not expecting to hear Diplomatic Immunity, the Drake record, that loud with a subwoofer, like, basically busting in my chest.
Is that a good thing?
It was a very good thing. It sounded great.
Okay.
We might as well do it right now. We might have, I don't think we did mention that Drake debuted at number one.
One and what?
Seven.
Seven?
Yeah. Diplomatic Immunity debuted at seven.
That's crazy.
On a rapidy rap record that is actually, I didn't talk enough about how, like, yeah, that's a really good song. Diplomatic Immunity is amazing.
See that? And that's what it comes down to. Like, as long as you make good music, like, you can always get back in the people's good graces. You can always have success.
Diplomatic Immunity is great. It's funny. Like, it takes me a little longer to catch on to the rapidy rap lines that you catch up on so quickly. But conversely, I'm sitting here nitpicking. Like, I'm sitting there like, oh, first I hear the vaguely sampled bass line, and then they put the synth on top. Like, I'm sitting there like, think about that.
Yes.
So shout out to Drake for number one and number seven on a surprise single drop. Because why not? Let's see what else is good on here. I mean, I still like Motorsport. I think Motorsport actually comes off sounding even better in the context of the album, because it's actually just really well done.
Mm.
I like Murda's production. I think he's a notch above some of the generic stuff that's on here. And I like the beat on Made Men. That's about it for the album. That's really it. There's an ad, some of those songs, I just mentioned them because they were noteworthy, not even because they were that good. I mean, the secret about Culture One is that it's also not that great, but it's shorter.
Right.
Much shorter.
Yeah, I think the 24-track narrative did not help them out. I think that people are so used to short projects that, like, I think Chris Brown sort of kicking the door down on that has immediately given it a bad, like, people don't want it if it's over 14, 15 records.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of thinking that, you know, I think we might enter an era where it's either like 10 or 12 or it's like 20 plus.
Oh, no. Don't get me wrong. Like, people are going to eventually adjust to bunches of new music. It's just when we are switching back to something, there's going to be resistance like there is with any change.
Yeah.
No, we're 100%. And yeah, I talked to one of my friends about that, and that's kind of where we got to. It was like, it really comes down to intent. Mm. And I think that there will still be people who want to do, you know, like my album has 9 tracks. I could do it, and I thought about it. I'm like, well, dang, I could do a 30-track album, like, fairly easily. Like, I could do that. Will I? I don't know. Maybe. But, okay, my goal with my album was to, I want a concise, short album because I want a classic. I want something that's going to have some longevity. I'm saying a lot of really heavy, weighty, important things, and I want those things to be I want them to exist rather than the narrative be, oh, there's 30 tracks on this album. Versus, okay, I'm trying to get my streams up. Because it's the music business, I'm not mad at that. So I think I agree with you. I think that you're going to get people who still will do short EPs and stuff like that because the attention spans of our culture, like, they're just not going to get any longer. But on the flip, we're still going to get 30 and 40 track albums. Like, No Limit Records is coming back.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I also think that the length of the album is sort of a signal to fans of what type of album it is, if that makes
sense. Right. Yes.
Like, these little collabo albums, those are like 10, 11, 12 tracks. Those are the new mixtape.
Yes.
Right. But like, oh, my 25, 35 track album, that's my album.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's also just, you know what? It's just content. Like, here's the amazing thing. Like, knowing, like, I'm thinking about Drake, like, he could go in either one of those directions. Like, I could totally see a 30 track Drake playlist.
I mean, how many tracks is More Life?
It was like 24.
Oh.
But because he called it a playlist, but you know what I mean? Like, just a straight up him going, no, this is totally 2 discs, blah, blah, blah. But I could also see him doing a surprise, like 11 track in the middle of Night Drop. Like, that's the interesting thing about streaming. Like, everything's wide open now. There's all sorts of ways to attack it.
Yep, agreed.
This is not a good Migos album.
I mean, I think the feedback that is really funny to me is that, like, people, I like, what are you expecting from a Migos album?
I expected better beats, to be honest. Like, I just, I mean, the a lot of the production, I was just like, no.
I guess it's weird, and maybe this is just me being old, like, all of it sounds the same. So I don't know what a good Migos beat sounds like.
Mm.
Like, what I heard, I mean, what I'm saying is like, I don't know what I heard sounded like, because I like Migos, like, but what I heard sounded like, oh, these sound like Migos songs. I think that's why I like Stir Fry and Made Men so much, because they don't sound like Migos records, and they both work. Even though Made Men, like, the song's not good, the hook is lazy, like, Takeoff is cool on there, I don't like Quavo on there, but that beat is crazy. Stir Fry, like, is a Pharrell song. Like, yo, Pharrell wrote all of Quavo's stuff.
I think he just did the little bridge.
Nah, dance for my dogs in the nighttime. Pharrell wrote that, and Quavo's verse. I mean, dance for my dogs in the nighttime. What does that mean? That's a Pharrell line. Look at the words that are written on Pharrell's Human Races, like, just two words that don't make sense but somehow go together because Pharrell's fake deep. He totally wrote Quavo's verse. Totally wrote his verse. I can hear it. But anyway.
Yeah. Anything else we want to say about Migos? I just want to talk about Timberlake. What else we want? Anything else we want to say about Migos?
Let's get into your man Justin.
So we are doing something that we don't typically do often anymore.
Which is?
We are going to talk about an album that is not yet officially available.
Yeah. Yeah. So we should probably wrap up because, I mean, the album will be available tomorrow.
So right, by the time most people are hearing this, the album will be out.
Right.
We acquired an opportunity to listen to a pre-release version.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say.
Streets are good to us.
I feel like I need to do track by track on this.
No.
What?
No. Only because, like, this is just the preview. Like,
oh, okay.
I'm not giving a deep, because next week, are we doing a definitive 15 on Justin?
We are. Next week, we're doing a definitive 15 on Justin. So we'll pair that with a full. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Can we talk about what we like and don't like then? Is that fair?
Sure. We can start off with just first impressions.
Okay. You want to start positive or negative?
You go ahead. Wherever you want to go.
This is an album full of incredible highs and just songs I'm embarrassed to have heard on his behalf.
Oh my God. Here we go.
I'm dead serious. I'm not reaching. There's no hot takes. I'm going to start with the positive. Midnight Summer Jam. Oh my goodness.
Woo! That was cool.
No. 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 Cool. Should have been the first single for starters, because it's one of the best meldings of these supposed worlds that he's trying to do on this album. Midnight Summer Jam is like if Pharrell heard the Bubba Sparks Deliverance album and was like, I got it. Let's go.
I agree with that. I also feel like it gives me, and maybe this is why I'm not as crazy about it as you are, is that this feels like, I don't want to say a leftover, but this still feels like 2020.
Well, most of what's on 2020 is far better than most of this album. So like,
what I'm saying is like, it's a very big record. There's a lot of musicianship, lots of switches, lots of changes. To me, that's why it feels like a record off of 2020.
Interesting. All right. We need to acknowledge how incredible Higher Higher is.
I'm not there yet with Higher Higher.
Oh,
like, I want to like Higher Higher.
Pharrell, oh my God, killing this song. Higher Higher is unbelievable. Like, upper echelon Pharrell. Like, in every way. Like, I almost want to hear I want to hear Pharrell singing the song. Like, this is just, is so, like, peak Pharrell. I'm actually astonished that Justin and Pharrell did a record like this in 2018. Like, this song is unbelievable. I love Higher Higher.
Mm.
All right, that's pretty much where I end right there, man. let's see. I still don't know what to make of Supplies.
I still don't like Supplies.
I don't really like it. The Chris Stapleton record, Say Something. I mean, it sounds okay. Sounds fine. I'm not really clear what the song's even really about. And I'm not a big Chris Stapleton guy because I don't listen to country music. There's a whole like section in the middle of this album I'm not yet crazy about. No, when I said embarrassing stuff, man, listen, that Flannel record is awful. Awful.
The Flannel record is really bad.
It's embarrassing. Like, maybe, look, I know I'm jaded. I know I'm cynical. But like, the combo of that interlude and Flannel was terrible.
Actually, I understood the interlude.
I got it too.
Yeah, like, except, I'm like, okay, where are you gonna go with this?
It would have made more sense on like if Jessica Biel had an album.
No, what?
Because that's her on the interlude.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
But it felt weird before Flannel. I don't know. Not a fan. Flannel's terrible. Like, I was playing the album last night with Marissa. We were just looking at each other like, is this really happening? I just couldn't believe it. I can't believe Pharrell had anything to do with that record. I don't get it. And then, you know, there's some weird stuff. I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, Montana is like it feels like the Neptunes Daft Punk stuff that they were doing for a bit, just with an acoustic guitar on top.
Uh-huh.
I know you want to get some bars off about Breeze Off the Pond.
Breeze Off the Pond is an early favorite. That's Neptunes, right?
Yeah. I really like the tempo. I'm not sure how I feel about the hook, which honestly I could say I'm not sure how I feel about the hook on like a lot of these records.
Mm.
But it's not bad.
I feel like I'm gonna like Wave in a couple weeks.
Yo, no, no.
No, I feel Wave, like I'm gonna like Wave.
Wave is so bad.
No, not so bad.
Wave is awful. So is Sauce. And like this whole idea, you know what actually really bothers me on this album that I haven't figured out? Look, if you're ridiculously rich and famous like Timberlake is, I just can't really hear him singing about what it's like to live off the land and about dealing with credit card bills, because that's not true.
I can see him talking about living off the land if he's bought a lot of land.
But that's not what he means on that record.
Okay.
I mean, he's talking about like he's putting it, like he's out there like making a living, like he's like got, like he's really getting his hand. I don't know. There are huge chunks of this album that sound, if this is who he is, then I mean, I guess good, like, okay. But like, it just sounds forced, fake. I don't know. This whole, like, it doesn't sound like an authentic thing to me, a lot of this. But then some of it is, it's like, again, Midnight Summer Jam, and Higher, Higher. I'm just like, how does the album that contains those two also contain Flannel?
I think that also speaks to, I don't know if it was the article you sent me where I read it, but there was something that I read that talked about how Justin, as much success as he's gotten, he had become a reluctant pop star, where, you know, he was basically, after his first two albums, he was christened as the one, and he just didn't, because what was the difference? What was the time between Future Sex and 2020 is what? Nine years?
It's like, it's a long time. Yeah. Was it 2006 and 2013?
I think it came out later. It's 2014, I think, was 2020.
Was it?
I think so. I don't think it was 2013. I think it was early 2014. No.
March 15th, 2013.
What? Really? Okay. All right. Then that's my bad. Yeah. So like in that space, I feel like whatever happened, or not, I feel like, but the article kind of just said whatever happened, Justin kind of didn't want to be the guy in the spotlight like he had been for much of his life. Mm. And I think that that is indicative on this album. So maybe he's singing about credit card bills because maybe that's a life that he wants.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, just didn't really, yeah.
And maybe it would have been different if the song was good.
Maybe. I mean, there are a handful of tracks where Chris Stapleton like is like writing on it as well. And I wonder if some of that's just like, that's his like sort of contribution, and it might make more sense or sound more authentic coming from him. But I don't know. It's kind of weird.
And I asked a question on Twitter a long time ago where it said, why does Justin only work with Tim and the Neptunes? Why doesn't he work with someone else? And then we get a bunch of Chris Stapleton tracks, and I'm like, oh, that's why. It's like, I don't want to hear, like, I'm not the biggest fan of, like, just, I don't love Justin and Tim the way that you love Justin and Tim. Like, I prefer Justin with Pharrell. Mm. Though Justin and Tim have classics, amazing material, I just prefer Justin and Pharrell. So much so that that's all I want to hear. Whenever I hear a Justin song and it doesn't have Pharrell chords, I'm like, it takes me a while to like fall in love with it. And so even when I hear Timbaland records, I still understand the Justin and Timbaland dynamic. But when I'm hearing Justin when I hear Justin singing over acoustic guitars, that's a huge learning curve that I got to get used to. Mm. So much so that I kind of don't even want to do it, because with Justin, I just maybe want to dance, or I just want it to be warmer outside. And that just might be the problem. So that's why I didn't want to go into the album at length, because I've only heard the album twice. And I want to give it a better shot, because I feel like as a Justin fan, I owe him a better shot than this. And I want to hear it again when it's warmer out. Like, I want to go back and listen to that in NERD, like in April. I feel like both of those albums are going to sound totally different.
That's fair. I was just looking through Justin's back catalog. When we do the Definitive 15 next week and come back with some more impressions on the a deeper review on the Timberlake album. It'll be really interesting to see the difference between, I was almost thinking at first, well, you and I are obviously going to have a very similar Definitive 15. I don't know. We might go in some very different directions.
I think we're going to go in different directions.
I don't think you're prepared for me to put Let the Groove Get In on my Definitive 15.
No, you got it. Maybe. That doesn't surprise me.
It's a contender.
That doesn't surprise me. Like, but the fact that I love Justified and you're like, nah.
No, Justified is good, but Future Sex is better.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. Can we do unreleased songs too?
Sure, do whatever.
All right, bet.
This is Clock Radio. Can we do unreleased songs?
No, I just want to make sure.
It's Clock Radio Speakers.
All right. That's all I needed to know. So yeah, I wanted to wait. So I'm interested. I'm sure something else will happen between this week and next week where it won't be. It might not be all Justin everything, but it just might.
Yeah, very, next week, I mean, you know, talk a little Super Bowl, but...
You can talk Super Bowl. I'm not watching Super Bowl.
You're not... If you at least got to... I mean, Justin's doing the halftime show.
I mean, yeah, sure, I'll end up watching that, but I'm not you're pressed.
You're not going to watch? You're not going to root for Tom Brady to win his sixth title?
Don't disrespect me. You know how I feel about Thomas. Don't do that.
Thomas!
If I see Adam Vinatieri, like, I'm going to jail because I'm going to beat him up. Like, I'm going to beat him up. Now, Bill Belichick is funny because I love dry humor. So he might get a pass, even though he's kind of like the ringleader. But no. I'm good.
I forgot to ask, how was Raw 25?
Very underwhelming.
And then how was the Royal Rumble?
Not bad.
Okay.
Not bad. The Royal Rumble match was the best because they had a women's one as well. Both of them were really good, really entertaining. And though the winners were obvious, I liked the story, both stories that they told to get to the winners. So I enjoyed myself. Raw 25, the problem with Raw 25 is that when you get like the old guys now are really old. So when you have like Raw 100, like the 100th episode.
I thought you were talking about hypothetical.
No.
100 but they had like years a, they of had Raw.
Like in 2000 and maybe 12 or something like that, they had the 100th episode of Raw. So Shawn was like freshly retired. Stone Cold, I mean, like they still rock. Like all the old guys still look like, okay, if I ran into them. If they had a couple months to train, if I ran into them in a bar, they could still, you know, give me these hands. Now, they're just like, they just look really old. So it's different when you see young guys, 24, 25-year-olds, taking, you know, moves from badass Billy Gunn and Road Dogg. Like, it's different now than it was in 5 years ago. So if your old guys are coming back and they're still beating up the new guys, what incentive is there for the casual fans who are tuning in because it's like, oh, my God, there's Stone Cold. Oh, my God, there's Vince McMahon. Oh, my God, there's all these people when I used to watch. But they're beating up the new guys. So if the new guys can't hang with the guys who I like who are older now, then why would I watch? Like, there's just because that era, the Attitude Era was so successful, Vince McMahon is just hanging on to that for dear life instead of focusing on building like new stars now. Because what are you going to do? And what are you going to do at Raw 50? What are you going to do at Raw 30? What are you going to do at Raw 40 when some of these wrestlers who we have on now have either passed on or they're like, you know, physically incapacitated and they can't really move around like that? Like, then what are you going to do? Like, are you going to wheel Stone Cold out? Like, that's not going to work. So, whatever.
So, I just realized I sort of steamrolled all over you in the Timberlake conversation. My apologies. You called out Breeze Off the Pond. Was there anything else that stuck out to you immediately as a, oh, yeah?
Not immediately. The second listen is when I liked Wave. What was the second song? A Midsummer Night's Dream?
Midsummer Jam.
Midnight Summer Jam was better. Higher was better. I think was Morning Light okay? I think Morning Light was okay.
With Alicia?
Oh, that does have Alicia on there. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like.
Yeah, I'm on a first name basis with Alicia. I don't know if I was.
Yeah, sure. I think the Neptunes records for me were all like okay, but it wasn't like. Whoa. But Breeze on the Palm was like the, all right. It was the one thing that was correct about the New York Times review that you sent me was that it doesn't, like, this album doesn't do, I don't think Tim and the Neptunes do anything new. I think they just kind of like just put some oil on the wheel that's already spinning.
I mean, Higher is really noteworthy to me. I'm going to make a comparison that will cause you to scoff, but hear me out. Higher, Pharrell is digging in those Allure chords. He's in that, yeah. And I don't recall ever hearing Justin on a record like that.
No, it's different.
It's definitely different. I don't know. There's actually very little Timbo on here, right? Timbo does Filthy, Sauce, Say Something, and Young Man. Most of the rest, with two exceptions, is all the Neptunes.
So then I wonder if that image that I sent you a few weeks ago that had the producers on there was right because
it was.
Okay.
So there's just a lot of Neptunes on here.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 Neptunes records.
on what? How many tracks on there? 15?
16, counting 16. an interlude.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
All right, man. Anything else? Anything else you want to say about Timberlake's album before we come back to it next week?
Nah, I think we're good. I think this is just enough to sort of whet people's appetites. But we will go in detail next week for sure.
Okay. Anything else you want to say this week?
Nope. Album coming soon. Even if I lose February, for sure, for sure, for sure. I'm excited. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening as always. Make sure to visit ClackRittySpeakers.com for all your ClackRitty speakery. Follow the show on Twitter at CRS Podcast, like Armand said, and we will be back next week to talk. It might just be all Timberlake all the time, but we are probably almost certainly going to combine Definitive 15 for Justin along with a in-depth conversation about the album. And yeah, I think that's it. So we'll catch you all next week.